We learned yesterday the Mishnah on Tesavav on the Beis. In brief, it had mentioned that you have five cases of tam and five cases of mur. The five cases of tam would mean, namely, that an animal starts out tam for these things and then becomes a mur eventually, maybe, is as far as goring and the various tools of it, biting and kicking and so forth. On the other hand, we said the five mu'adimar of animals is always more to eat what's growing there. It's always more to accidentally step on things with its feet. You have a shirt on mu'ad. You have with reshus hanizik and you have a person. And then the mission had finished off with six wild animals that we say are mu'ad and a machlokes on that subject. That was the mission end. So the Gemara starts out. Midikatani ashen mu'ad ismael. Since we're saying that the truth of the animal is mu'ad to eat the kind of things it would normally eat, maybe produce and whatnot. We'll learn in the next paragraph that if an animal, for example, were to eat clothes, then that would be considered keren. Meklal the b'chatzar nizik askin, and evidently we must be talking in the chatzar of the nizik rather than the rishus harabim, because we already established before that you potter for shein in rishus harabim. Again, not completely potter. You still have to pay mashanenis. You still have to pay the fact that it ate a certain amount, which you don't have to feed the animal now, but you don't have to pay the full value of what it ate.
So it's obvious that...
Well, the problem is, the katani behema animu edis l'shalom kule. However, the Mishnah started off by saying that an animal is not mu'ad to gore or push or bite, etc., implying animu edis in the sense l'shalom kule, in the sense it's not mu'ad to pay the whole thing, abachatzi nezik l'shalemis, implying that you do pay half a nezik, which, again, we're talking about just a nezik. We have to assume that all the cases in the Mishnah are talking in the same location. So if we're mentioning Shein and saying the animal was mu'ad as far as Shein, we must be talking about Chatzar Nizik, because according to the Rishus Rabbim, it would be a non-issue. Now that we establish that, when we're saying about Keren and it's told us that the animal starts out as Tam, and evidently the implication is that you pay only Chatzar Nizik, Mani Rabbanan, that would be according to the Rabbanan against your Tarifin. The machlokes that we mentioned yesterday, everybody agrees starts as a tam, but Rabbi Tausen, you remember, said that if it's b'chatzar and nizik, the different rules apply, and you always pay nezik shalom even if it's a tam. Evidently, our Mishnah, the first part of our Mishnah anyway, does not go like Rabbi Tausen. It must go according to the Rabbanan. Damri, which they say, Mishuna keren b'chatzar and nizik, that unusual keren, meaning keren of an animal which is a tam, even in the chotzer of the nizik, chatzin nezik, good mashalim, still pays chatzin nezik just as it would anywhere else. Mishuna keren means a tam, yeah. It means it's a keren, but it's mishuna in the sense it's unusual for this animal to do. This animal has not developed a regular habit of goring with horns or biting with teeth or what have you. Yeah. However, eima sefer, however then, look at the next part of the Mishnah, shura mu'ad, that we said among the mu'adim are the shura mu'ad, Rishur Amazik Rishus HaNizik, and a shur which causes damage in the Rishus of the Nizik, the Ha'adam, and a person. Now, if you mention Shur Amazik Rishus HaNizik, evidently, by not distinguishing, when it says Shur Amazik Rishus HaNizik, it doesn't distinguish between Tam and Mu'ad. Evidently, the implication is any time you have Keren in Chatzar HaNizik, regardless of the status of the animal, we treat it as a Mu'ad. Well, in that case, Ason and Rav Tarfon. That seems to follow Rav Tarfon. So I'm a Mishuna Keren. Right, yes. Mishuna Keren b'chatzar nizik. He says that the unusual case of Keren in chatzar nizik, again, where the animal is a tam, nezik sholem would mishalem, that he pays nezik sholem. So the implication of the first part of the Mishnah seems to contradict the implication of the second part. Reish Rabbanon b'sefer Rav Tarfon. Are you going to tell me the first part of the Mishnah is like the Rabbanon and the last part is like the Tarfon? The answer is A. Yes, you could say that. Sometimes you have. It's unusual, but you do have. As in fact, we find that Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda, Shinina, sharp one, or big-toothed one, Shvoik Masnissin, that was Rav Yehuda, his Talmud. Shinina is his name for him, perhaps. We've talked many times about that meaning of it. Shvoik Masnissin, give up on the Mishnah, give up trying to infer it according to one Tana, the Tar Basroi, and follow me, that, yes, they should have bonded the sefer of Tarfon. Yes, you do have to say that there's a list of Tamin in the Mishnah, the list of Tamin in the Mishnah versus the list of Muadim come according to two different opinions, Rebbe and the Rabbanon and Rav Tarfon, respectively. However, Rabbi Elazar Mishmeder Rav Amar. However, Rabbi Elazar gives in the name of Rav a different explanation. No, Kolod of Tarfani. No, you could actually say the entire Mishnah does go according to Rav Tarfan, because, as we talked about yesterday or the day before, there can be, when we talk about a chaser and who has rights to the chaser, we can distinguish within that itself what kind of rights do you have. Reisha b'chaser amirchedes l'peiris la'echad mehen. The Reisha is talking about a chaser which... That's Harav is going to explain the Mishnah. That we're talking about two... We're talking about different... Not that we're talking about Tarfon versus the Rabbanon, but rather we're talking about different kinds of chaser. Apparently, Shmuel didn't like that idea, because again, Shmuel assumed that given that we say Hashem Mu'edet Lechel Tarayla, and evidently that means Chatzara Nizek, he felt that all of them should be talking about the same kind of Chatzara Nizek. But Rav is pointing out that you could be talking about... So the Reisha is talking about where you're chayev for Shein and Regel, but you're only chayev chati nezek for Keren. That is because both of them have permission to bring in their oxen in there, but only one has permission to bring in his payers. So again, therefore, since one of them has the ability to bring in his payers, therefore you'll be chayav for Shane over there.
One has payers and shur.
One has payers and is also able to bring in a shur. The other is only able to bring in a shur, right? So relative to Shane, it can be considered chasaran nizek, because as far as Peiris, the other guy who owns the shur who ate the fruit has no right to bring his own Peiris in there. Therefore, you can't consider it a chaser of the mazik. It has to be considered for that purpose day after. As we said yesterday, we had the discussion between Rav Zeira and Abaya on that point. Whereas relative to Keren, since both of them are able to bring in their Shvarim in there, it can be considered Rosh Hashanah, and even Rav Tarfon in that case would agree that it's only Chatzi Nezek.
For Shem, it's
Rosh Hashanah Nezek, and for Keren, it's Yeah. Tosfos mentioned, so when we learned the Sugya about the different kinds of Chaseris, when we learned on Daf Yudalad 2 days ago, we mentioned that Tosfos had a different girsa about what the status was of this chaser. Tosfos had a girsa over there that neither one is allowed to bring in shvarim and only one is allowed to bring in payers. So here also Tosfos discusses that girsa as well over here. That's the point. If neither one is able to bring in his shvarim, then for sure it can be considered chasara nizek as far as payers. And since neither one has the right to have his shirt over there, then you can't call it chasara nizek. Again, where the Tarfon would say that in that case you pay nezek shalom. I didn't mention the other day, by the way, but the Nemuka Yosef has a whole different idea of this, which sort of answers some of Tosfos's questions on Rashi. He says that the vort is, maybe we're talking about that one or the other of them has the right to bring in his shvarim and the other has the right to bring in his payers, but the deal was that usually you're not allowed to bring in your shur until I remove my payers, or something to that effect. We have to take turns on what's there. So now if he brings in his shur while the other guy has his payers over there, then he's kind of. That's the Nemuka Yosef says that, yeah, and there is, yeah. Omer of Kahana, Amritza l'shmaita kamedet of Zvin min Hauda. Now, I told over this whole discussion, this whole thing of Shmuel and Rav, I told this all over to Rav Zvin min Hauda,
says
Rav Kahana, in a later generation. He says, I told over this whole discussion to Rav Zvin min Hauda, v'omali, and he says, mimotis mukmas l'kol l'kurb tafen. What are you talking about? How can Rav Elazar say in the name of Rav that you can fan for the whole Mishnah and explain it like Rav Tarfon? They're all Amritza. No. This is hundreds of years later, but still, this is how the Gemara works. That Rav Elazar made a statement in the name of Rav. Many years later, Rav Zvid is pointing out there seems to be a problem with it. Yeah. No, it can't be the whole thing like Rav Tarfon. Why?
He's saying,
how can you think that the answer that the entire Mishnah goes like Rav Tarfon? Hokatani, consider the Mishnah continues Hashem Mu'edet Lechalot Aroyla, that Hashem is Mu'ed as far as eating something that's suitable to it, meaning again, things that this kind of animal would normally eat. Let's say, for example, again, you know, you're talking about a cow, we're not talking about clothes or meat or what have you, we're talking about grain or fruit or, regular stuff. Which implies roi lo ein, she'en roi lo loi, implying only if it ate something that's roi, would it be considered mu'ad and would you pay nezek shalim? if it ate something she'en roi lo, then he would only pay chassi nezik, presumably. The ear of tarifan, if you're going to tell me your tarifan, halma mishuna keren b'chatzara nezik nezik shalim mishalim, if you're establishing that this is considered chatzara nezik, because he has the right to bring a teiris in there, fine. But in that case, if the animal ate something, ate some kind of teiris, which it wouldn't normally eat, that would be considered a species of keren, rather than shame. And we're saying that keren, according to your tarifan, you pay... No, but again, that's the thing. Mashinenis versus Mashizika. If it eats, again, in Rosh Hashanah, if it eats somebody's teres, you pay only Mashinenis. You pay only the Hanah value of it. As opposed to if it was Rosh Hashanah Nizek, you would pay the full value of it. And we'll learn when we get to the sixth teres, a couple of months and a half from now, we'll talk about the Gemara, we'll deal in some detail exactly how you calculate that.
So, right here.
Applied over here, then, what is the Mishnah implying? That the animal ate what's roi law. Implying if it wasn't roi law, then it's not muad, then you apply the usual rules of tam versus muad. Again, if it's chasara nizik, according to Tarifan, there is no tam versus muad distinction in that. It's definitely considered a form of keren, everybody would agree to that. And according to Tarifan, there is no distinction in keren, or chasara nizik, between tam and muad. Tosfos points out, I mean, when you get down to it, there's two distinctions between tam and mord, right? We said there's chati nezek versus nezek shalim. There's also the distinction, which we've mentioned before, in which the Mishnah is going to tell us again on Amud Bey, about migufoi versus minhalia. One should say that maybe we're comparing it to a mord only in one way, not in both. And Tosfos says no, because the two of them go together. Whenever you have chati nezek, it's always going to be migufoi, except for chati nezek tzoros, as we talked about yesterday. And when you have a nezek shalim, it's going to be minhalia. There's no half on that. There's no that it may be nezek shalim, but it's only migufoi. Even a tarifan wouldn't hold a such thing.
Minaliyah
means that you pay out of the best of your property from Meitav Sadev. Elolorim Rabbanan. So therefore, no, we have to answer that even that first part of the Mishnah, since we still have the problem, we don't want to really have to say, well, so at least the ratio we want to say must be according to the Rabbanan, like Shmuel said. We are changing because Rabbi Lazar had said that the whole thing is our Tarifan. Now Rabbi Zvidman Hadar is pointing out that doesn't work. Therefore, necessarily, we have to go back to saying that the first part is like the Rabbanan.
And it doesn't work.
Drachasuri Masra. However, we can say that the Mishnah is missing words. V'hachi katani, it means like this. Chamisha tamim, there are five cases where an animal starts out of the tam. The im huadu, but if they are warned, if the owner is warned that this is happening on a regular basis, two or three times, as we'll learn in the next parak, then the animal becomes a muad, and then they all become muad. However, v'shein v'regel muadim mitchivas, and however, v'shein and regel are always considered muad right from the beginning. There's never a tam versus muad distinction in them. V'heichan ha'adasan, and where is the ha'adah, where do we say that shein and regel are liable for chasar ha'nizek, as opposed to Rosh Hashanah, or as opposed to chasar ha'mabim?
So we're changing.
So we're not really changing. We're saying the Mishnah is implying that the Mishnah is implying, in other words, like this, that all of this that we're talking about, etc., is all talking in chasar ha'nizek. Shein and regel are also talking about in chasar ha'nizek. They don't start out as tam and later on become muad. They start out to begin with as muad. But all of this is talking about chasar ha'nizek. And yeah, that would be a point to the Rabbanan. Rashi says v'heichan ha'adasan to shein v'regel. Specifically shein v'regel. Because again, according to the Rabbanan, there's no difference whether v'rshus ha'nizek or v'rshus ha'rabim. Maskifle Ravina, however, Ravina asks on that, if that's how you're understanding the Mishnah, Hokatani l'kamon. Don't we have a Mishnah later on in the next parak that says Shur Hamazik v'Shus Hanizik Ketzer? We have a Mishnah that starts discussing over there what is the din of, how does it work, this case of Shur Hamazik v'Shus Hanizik, implying that, now when it says Ketzer, implies we had a mention of this concept before, now we're going to expand on it and provide the details. So, if you're going to say that we had a previous Mishnah, and that could only be our Mishnah, that mentioned this concept of Shur Hamazik v'Shus Hanizik, then therefore, later on, when it comes to talking about how does it work, Keren, Rosh Hashanah, and you're going to have, and present there the Machlokas of Rav Tarifan and the Rabbanan, Fine, then that follows logically from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, in other words, the explanation that we were giving before Elo La'olam Rabbanan was not mentioning, was saying when it comes to Keren, there's no difference between Chatzar and Nizek and anywhere else. Shein Berego is only in Chatzar and Nizek, which would be according to the Rabban. The problem with that is that what Ravina is asking is the implication from the later Mishnah in the next Perek is that we've had a Mishnah already that talked about the concept of Keren versus Anizim. That would have to be our Mishnah. Now, according to that explanation, the Mishnah never said anything about Keren versus Anizim. It just said Keren generically. So, Eli, Amit Loy Ayribo, if you're going to say that there's never been a Mishnah up till this point that has made any such distinction, that there might be a difference between Keren in Rishus HaNizek versus elsewhere, my case, what do you mean case? What do you mean how does this work when we don't even know that there's such a concept yet? So you can't say that. It must be that somehow our Mishnah is implying that there is a difference in Keren between Chatzar HaNizek and not. Now, according to Rabbi Elazar Mishmei Rav, that goes very nicely. Because that's what he says. The whole Mishnah is talking about the Chatzar HaNizek. He says that the Mishnah is talking about two different kinds of Chatzar HaNizek, whether you have right to bring in your Peiris and your Shvarim there, or only one or only the other. So then, fine, you can say, that, however, the Mishnah is definitely talking about some kind of Chatzar HaNizek. That's why I mentioned Shein. And therefore, okay, so we have the Mishnah is mentioning by implication this idea. There is such a thing as Chatzar HaNizek. There is such a thing as Keren in it. In the next paragraph, we'll talk about the details. But how does it work out if you want to say that the first part goes according to the Rabbanan, which was Shmuel's explanation? Elam Ravina, no, you do have to say Chasuri Masera. It's true. You do have to say the Mishnah is missing words, but the Hachi Kapani. Otherwise we have a contradiction between the first and the second part of the Mishnah. We want to show that we want to try to establish the whole Mishnah like one Tana, if at all possible. So, Ela Amar Ravina, the Mishnah then means to say like this. Chamisha Tamimheim, there's five cases of an animal which starts out Tam. Bimhuah du Chamesh din Mu'ad. And again, this part is the same as the previous Chasuri Master. If they're warned three times, then they become Mu'ad. The Shein v'Regel Mu'adin v'Tchilasin. Shein and Regel, on the other hand, are among the ones that are Mu'ad, are ones that are Mu'ad to begin with. V'Zehu Shur HaMu'ad. Namely, this is the key thing that Ravina is changing. Namely, this is the case of Shur HaMu'ad. In other words, we learned the Mishnah. We said the five Mu'adim are number one Shein, number two Regel, number three Shur HaMu'ad, number four Shur HaMazik, Rishus HaNizik, and number five Ha'adam. Now what we're doing is we're saying that Shein and Rego, not to say Shur HaMu'ad means Shein and Rego. The Zeru Shur HaMu'ad means that going back now, when we said there's five Tamim which can become Mu'adim, that is what we mean by Shur HaMu'ad. When we say Shur HaMu'ad, when Torah mentions the concept of Shur HaMu'ad, Behu'ad with all the Palosh Miranu, it means those cases of five Tamim, those cases of an animal that was goring or biting or kicking or what have you, which was Mu'ad three times.
Meaning what? Meaning the...
So, in other words, Chamisha Tamimheim, there's five cases of Tamim, which any of them can become Mu'ad.
Shen?
No. Ligach, Ligos, Lishach, Lubos, Libo. The five, the Keren and its source. Then the Mishnah interjects. There's cases where an animal is Mu'ad to begin with, namely Shein and Regel. Now, going back to the Chamisha Tamim, the Chamisha Mu'adim, the Chamisha Tamim, which are able to become Chamisha Mu'adim, that is the definition of Shur HaMu'ad. When the Torah tells us about a Shur HaMu'ad, it means an animal that is gored three times or bit three times or what have you, and the animal and the owner was warned about it. That is the definition of a Shur HaMu'ad from the Torah. Thus far, in other words, the point is, thus far the Mishnah would be talking according to everybody. Now the Mishnah is going to start with the part that's Machlokas. The Shur HaMazik Rishus HaNizik, Machlokas Rav Tappan Rabbanan. The next case that we had in the Mishnah, the Shur, which is Mazik in the Rishus of the Nizik, that's not something which is definitely Mu'ad. That is something, there's actually a Machlokas on that. Definitely Mu'ad. That's not something that is necessarily one of the Tamim that becomes Mu'adim. That's the subject of Machlokas Rav Tappan and the Rabbanan, whether it starts out Tamim and becomes Mu'ad, in other words, whether it belongs in the first category, or whether it's always Mu'ad, the second category, like Shein and Regel. Yeshu Odin Achir and Kayetz Ve'elu.
Sure, Muad, in other words, they argue about whether it's initially Muad or whether it becomes Muad after.
No, there's no question that an animal becomes Muad only after three times. The question is, when we say Shurda Mazik Vishus Amizik, is that, we're saying, that does that, which category does that belong in? Is that in the category like any other Shurda Mazik, like any other Shurda Keren, where three times time afterwards a Muad? Or, like Rav Tarfon, is it considered a muad right away? It wouldn't be considered a muad for all other purposes. If it gored b'chassar nezek one time, and you pay nezek shalid, and then goes out into a shoshar abim and gores again, even Rav Tarfon wouldn't say that it's a muad already.
So
he would say that we override the usual rules of tam and muad when it's b'chassar nezek. Other than that,
we make it
temporarily muad, though. Temporarily muad in the sense for this particular case, we make it muad.
But it counts as well.
Right? Yeah, it counts as one of the three pashtos, yeah. But if afterwards it goes down to Rishus HaRabim and gores again, then it's still a tam.
Only in the Rishus HaMizah.
That's what Rav Tarfon would say, yeah. So that's what Ravina is explaining in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is telling us about the tamim that can become muadim, then it's telling us about the ones that are muad to begin with, and then it's mentioning, and you should know, when it comes to Shurda Mazik, Rishus HaNizik, there's a machlokas, which of those two categories it belongs to. So therefore, yes, our Mishnah is implying with those words that there is a machlokas, which will be explained in the second parak. And then the Mishnah would continue, v'yesh mu'odim acherim kayetze be'elu. Then there are other cases of animals that are considered a mu'od to begin with, namely hazeh v'ari v'adur v'abadlus anam v'anachash, namely a wolf or lion or bear or badlus or a leopard or a snake.
Yeah.
Wolf, a lion, a bear, a badlus, which we mentioned a couple of possibilities yesterday where a badlus is. It might be a panther, it might be a hyena, it might be a skunk or some similar creature. It might even be, I saw one explanation that it might be a turtle of some kind. Yeah, whatever. And a leopard. Vanomer and a snake. Which Rashi points out, by the way, so why wouldn't it list all of them together? The difference is that the ones that we were talking about up till that point are mentioned in the Pasuk. Shane and Regal are mentioned in the Pasuk. Karen is mentioned in the Pasuk, and we derive all the other ones from it by Mamasinu, as we said at the beginning of the parak. All these other animals are never mentioned in the Pasuk, anything about your pet lion eating something or whatever. Those are they're a different category, therefore the Mishnah looks them separate.
What about other dangerous and wild animals?
Okay,
gorillas,
at least these animals were known at that time. I don't know if people knew even of gorillas at that time, but the difference may be basically that there are other animals that in principle can be tamed enough, and the Chachamim are saying, again, according to the laws or not, but according to the Chachamim, yes, that these particular animals can never be fully tamed. Yeah, I mean, there might be others added. There might be conceivably others added to that category, yeah. Tani Namihachi, indeed we learn a braisa that reformulates the Mishnah exactly the way the Ravina said it. Chamisha Tanimheim, there's five cases where an animal starts out tam, the imhuadu, but if there is hada, if there's warning to the owner, chamishtin muadin, then all five of them become muad. V'shein v'regel muadin mishkalos, and on the other hand, shein and regel start out muad to begin with. V'zehu Shurda Muad, going back now to the Chamisha Tamin v'Chamisha Muadin, that is the case of Shurda Muad. Any of those five Tamin which becomes a Muad is the Shurda Muad which is discussed in the Torah. In other words, one key thing about Ravina's reformulation and now the Braisa is we thought when we learned the Mishnah, Chamisha Tamin v'Chamisha Muadin meant there's five Tamin, namely Keren and Tzoldos, and then there's five Muadin, namely the next five things that the Mishnah listed. Now we're saying that no. The Mishnah is listing several different categories of things. It's listing tamin, which are every one of which is able to become a muad. Then it's listing several things which are muad b'tzilos, not necessarily fine though. Especially one of them, in fact, is the machlokes of Rav Tarfon and the Chachamim. And then it's listing Shurda Mazik v'Shurda Nezek, yeah. And then it's mentioning several other creatures, Hazei, Bahari, etc., which are always muad. The Shur, which causes damage in the Rishus HaNizik, is the subject of Machlokes or Taifun the Rabbanon, which of these two categories it falls in. The Yesh Mu'od Mechayim Keyetz Ve'elu, and then there are other animals that are Mu'od similarly, namely Hazei, Ba'ari, Adoi, Ba'anam, Ba'abad, L'Sanach.
beginning.
Which are always, which are more to begin with, right. And it's always remain more.
I mean, regarding the Shura, Mazik, the Shura Samizah, the Chachamim say...
The Chachamim say it's a Tam, like any other Tam.
And
Rav Tarfon says, even if ordinarily it would be considered a Tam, for this purpose we treat it like a Mord. Yeah. The Gemara says, another version of this whole discussion was that it wasn't, that it was formulated in the form of a contradiction between between the two parts of the Mishnah. So what did we have so far? We had when Ravina came in with his explanation, it was in response to, we started saying that the Mishnah must be missing words, but we said the words that you thought was missing can't really be the ones that's missing, and therefore we have to reformulate the Mishnah properly and supply what the real missing words are. A different version of the discussion went that Ravina came in with his answer based on a question that the Yeshivalite pointed out, a contradiction between the two halves of the Mishnah. Namely, Tnan, Chamisha Tamim and Chamisha Muadim. The Mishnah starts off by saying there's five Tamim and five Muadim, which presumably, again, the understanding is that the five Tamim are carried under the Tzoldos, and the five Muadim are everything listed after that. Shein Regel, Shera Muad, Shera Mazik, and Adam. The problem with that is that the two Lekko, what do you mean? There's only five Muadim? So the Mishnah should have said there's five Tamim and 11 Muadim. Well, Mishani, and then the answer comes in. Amar Ravina, Chasuri Master, the Mishnah is missing words. There's five cases of Tamim, the Im Huadu Chamesh Muadim. All five of them are able to become Muad. So the again, the Chamesh Muadim are not explicitly listed in the Mishnah, but they're listed by implication, because any of these ones, Ligach, Ligach, Lishach, etc., can all become Muadim. The Shein Regel Muadim is Chilasan. On the other hand, Shein and Regel start out Muad. Ligach Lishach Lirbot and Ligach. Keren and all told us. Ligach means to gore, Ligach to push, Lishach to bite, Lirbot to lie on utensils and break them, and Lirbot to kick. The Shein Regel Muadim is Chilasan. On the other hand, normal Shein, eating what it normally eats, and Regel, trampling or kicking what it normally, not kicking, whatever, trampling or brushing with its feet what it normally might, is Muad Mitzchilasan. The Zehu Shara Muad, now these five Tamim, which can become five Muadim, are the definition of Shara Muad. When the Torah says Shara Muad pays Nezik Shalom, that's what it means. Any of those five Tamim which can put. It's just because it's listing the possible muadim, but it's referring back to the Chamisha Tam. But it's saying you should know in the category of muad, first of all, there's Shein Veregel about muad mitzvahsan. Second of all, those five tamim he said can become five muadim. That is the definition of shera muad. Yeah, you're right. It could have put the shera muad before Shein Veregel, and it would have saved us a lot of trouble. But yeah, that's yeah. On the other hand, v'shara mazik v'shus ha-nizik machloikas are tavern rabbanon. With v'shus ha-nizik, that is a machloikas which category it belongs in. And then, v'yesh mu'adim achayim peyitz ve'elu. And then, aside from the five tamim, which can become five mu'adim, and aside from the other ones that we said are more v'chilasan, there's six other cases of an animal that starts out. Mu'ad ha-zei v'ari v'adoi 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 v'adoi. So that's the bottom line. The Mishnah is not saying that there's only five Tamim, and the Mishnah is not saying there's only five Muadim and no more. The Mishnah is saying there's a great deal of Muadim, there's a great number of Muadim. There are Tamim that can become Muadim, there are Muadim Mitzvahsan, all of which are explicitly mentioned in the Pasuk, and then there are other Muadim Mitzvahsan that are not explicitly mentioned in the Pasuk, namely the six wild animals.
That's all Muadim.
And which are all Muadim. Then we said v'loy lirbot. The next, we said that one of the things in the Mishnah was that keren includes that an animal lies down on things and breaks them. Hello, Amar Rav Elazar, loy shonu al pachim gdolim. This is only talking about if what it lay down on were large jugs. It's not normal for an animal to lie on large jugs. They'd be very uncomfortable. If it's doing that, it must be doing it deliberately. Similar to Karen, where it's doing it sort of like out of anger or out of spite or whatever, yeah, to deliberately to cause damage. But if it was small drugs, that's normal for it to lay on them. Therefore, again, that would not be considered keren, that would be considered regel. Therefore, the usual rules of regel apply. Rishus Rabin, your potter, Rishus Hamidik, Nezek Shalim. You wouldn't consider it a form of keren, you'd consider it a form of regel. Whereas the big ones would be considered keren. Okay. The Gemara says, Lema Messiah, can we say that the wording of the Mishnah supports him? That the Mishnah says, an animal is moored as far as walking normally, or shaver, and or mayachas adam, and to break or to squash as a adam versus a behem versus a kalim, people or animals or kalim. So by mentioning that kalim is considered a normal situation, that would seem to imply that given that our Mishnah mentioned lirboit as being part of keren, on the other hand, this braisa seems to be saying that breaking kalim is a normal thing. That seems to imply that distinction. It must be big versus small kalim. The Gemara says not necessarily because zulum and atlusam. Maybe, but maybe not. The Gemara says not necessarily. Can you use that inference because zulum and atlusam? Maybe the braisa is talking about not where the animal lies on the kalim, but rather where it brushes by them, where it squashes them as it's walking by next to a wall. There's a narrow space over there, and accidentally a kalim gets stuck in there in between and gets broken.
That would
for sure be regal. Everybody would agree that's regal, because that's where the animal is walking by in a normal way. You might not necessarily say that when it comes to lying on kalim, that there's a difference between big and small ones. Maybe, but you can't prove it from this braisa. Ikadamri, and another version of the discussion is the other way around. Amar Rabbalaza, loy tema pachin ger lemu delava. Okay, don't think Rabbalaza says according to the second version that for an animal to lie on large jugs is not normal. Avo pachin tanim orchehu, but for it to lie on small kalim is normal. No, el afal pachin tanim nami lava orchehu. But even small jugs, according to the second version of Rabbalaza, said would say that it's not normal. Either way, big or small, it would be kerem. Well, in that case. Maybe in that case we can ask a question then from the braisa that we just brought. On this interpretation, right? We say it's normal for an animal to squash people. The mayach literally means to squash, to crush. The people or animals or kalim. However, Amar Rabbalazar can answer to that. No, because dilma min atzad. No, because not necessarily, because you could say, again, that it means that they get stuck between it and the wall and they get broken that way. And it's squeezing by in a narrow space by a wall over there and there's Kaylee over there and it ends up breaking.
It's very unusual.
Why is it very unusual? If an animal is walking through...
Yeah, it could happen.
Honey. So that would be considered regular, because that would be considered something fairly straightforward, and it's not like the animal meant to do any damage. As opposed to here, Lurberg, according to the second way, regardless whether it was large or small kalim, it's not something it would normally do. It would usually be uncomfortable for it to lie down on any kind of kalim. It's not something it would normally do. It's something that, so to speak, it does out of spite. That would be keter. And yet a third version, Ika de Rami La Mirma, yet another version of this discussion, is that it was brought up as a contradiction between our Mishnah and the Braisa. The first two versions are Rabbalazar made a statement, and then we brought in the Braisa either to support him or to contradict him. The third version is that L'Hatchila, they started out with Mishnah versus the Braisa, and then Rabbalazar came in and gave his explanation. Tanan, V'loy Lirboi, the Mishnah says that an animal is not muad as far as lying down on kalim. But Braisa says that an animal is muad, because the form of rego, for it to squash people or animals of kalim. And on that, Amar Rabbalazar, like kasha kind of pachin gerlim kind of pachin tanim. Interesting thing that because we talk about before a lot of times that a big rule among the Rishonim is that when the Gemara mentions several different versions of a discussion, you usually go according to the last version. Now, does that apply over here? We have three different versions of the discussion. We had version number one and version number two within the way that Rabbalazar mentioned his statement first, and then we brought in the Braisa. And then we had a whole different version where the Braisa is brought in first, and then Rabbalazar comes in with his character. Which one do you pass, you might? So in fact, the Rambam holds like the last version, the Ikka the Rami Lomirma. So therefore, and then Rabbi Elazar comes in, and therefore, since the Gemara only presented one version of that discussion, that Rabbi Elazar enters and says, "Pachim Gerlim versus Kanim," then according to that, the halacha would have to be that whether it's Gerlim or Kanim makes a difference. One is Keren, one is Regel. Whereas the other way of looking at it is you go according to the Ikka de Amri. The Ikka de Amri is considered the last version, and therefore you would go according to that. The Ikka de Amri was that Rabbi Elazar said there's no difference between big and small. The Braita is not a contradiction because the Braita is talking about a completely different case where it gets squashed between the animal's side and the wall. And therefore, the halacha would indeed be that there's no difference between the Gerlim and Kanim. That's how the Rambam asks. So in Shulchan Aruch, you can find both opinions.
Based on the
order of things in the Gemara.
There's a lot of places like that where the halacha is determined by the order of things.
We mentioned just the other day that there were two different versions of the discussion, and the halacha was back in like the second one. Yeah, because again, that was part of the editorial work that Ravina Veravashi did on the Gemara. They didn't just take tape recordings from the Amoraim and put them down on paper. They edited them. They put them in a proper seder. And part of that is determining which should go first and which should go second, and therefore which one should be used as a basis
rule.
Yeah, every rule has exceptions, but yeah, that is the general rule. We said in the Mishnah, Zebari, before we mentioned six wild animals in the Mishnah, all of them we know what they are except for Bardla. My Bardla, so what is a Bardla? I said there's a few different ones. Hyena, panther, a weasel, a skunk, whatever. Yeah. The dictionary say that the word Bardla apparently comes from a Greek word that means something like a leopard or a spotted creature. So in which case, it could be a leopard or a hyena or something, but the Gemara has a different take on it. Rabbi Yehuda Nafriza. Rabbi Yehuda says it's an animal that in his times was called Nafriza. Well, in a later time, they didn't know what that is, my Nafriza. So in the next generation, I'm going to be a Sapa. And that was something that they could understand. So Gilyan Ashaf, Rabbi Akiva Eger, mentions, based on a different Gemara, that an Apa is actually a snake, is actually an Efe, which is a particularly dangerous kind of snake. I think in English, they translate it as like a viper or something.
Not an
ape. The Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. What do you mean that it's a Nafrza or an Apa? Bryce says, Rav Meir, I'm an Apa Tavua. Rav Meir says that besides for the list of six animals in our Mishnah, also a Tavua, or besides for the list of five animals, again, the Nachash was afterwards, and we had a Zeva, Riva, Noiva, Namava, Baglis. So besides those, Rav Meir, I'm an Apa Tavua, also a Tavua, which is, in modern Hebrew, a Tavua is a hyena. In the Gemara, we'll see. Rabbi Elazar, I'm Afanachash. Rabbi Elazar says that another one on the list that has to be added to this list of animals that are always moored is a snake. Also,
we had it.
In the Mishnah, we had this is the Bryce that we're talking about. In other words, the idea would be there was an original list of five, then the Mishnah had added Nachash, and then the Mishnah had added Nachash based on what Rabbi Elazar is saying. But Omer Rabbi Yosef, Savua, do Apa. And Rabbi Yosef says that Savua is what we call Apa. So you just said that Bardalos is Apa, so what does your mayor have to add Savua, if it's the same thing, if it's also an Apa? The answer is, like Kasha, kind of Savua Zohar, kind of Savua Nekeva. There's a difference between the male and the female Savua. Rashi gives two explanations. One is, the one in our Mishnah is talking about a male Savua. Rav Meir is adding also a female one. Now, only a male one is called an Aramaic Apa. A female one, which the mayor is adding, is not called Apa. So Rabbi Yosef is not defining the word Savua that Rabbi Meir mentioned, because then he couldn't say Savua to Apa. He's just saying that as the Gemara is going to say now, one transforms into the other, so eventually a Savua becomes an Apa. But not to say, in other words, the Bardalos of our Mishnah is called an Aramaic Apa. The Savua is something that eventually becomes an Apa, and therefore Rabbi Yosef is saying you should know when Rabbi Meir says Apa Savua, it means something that eventually transforms into an Apa. That's Rashi's push. We'll see in a second. We'll learn in the next couple lines of Gemara. Anyway, that's all Rashi's first explanation. Rashi also says, by the way, that's why it has so many names. That's why it's called Bardalos and Nafrza and Apa, because it transforms from one into the other.
No, chameleon
just changes color. Okay, wait. Then Rashi brings another explanation. Rashi brings another explanation then, which is the same as what, which is also the same explanation as Rabbeinu Hananel. The other way around, the Mishnah is talking about a female Tzavua. Rav Meir is adding a male one. Either one can be called Alpha. And again, the point would be, why do you have to mention both? Usually, of course, when you mean the male species, you also mean the female. But again, because of these transformations going on, therefore you have to mention both. Kitanya, as we learn in a Braisa, that there is this transformation. A male tzavua, after 7 years, becomes an atalit, which is a fact. Atalit, like a sheva shanim nasa arpod, after 7 years, that becomes an arpod, which is another kind of bat. In modern Hebrew, arpod means a vampire bat. It not necessarily doesn't mean that in our Gemara over here. Arpod, like a zayin shanim nasa kimosh. After 7 years, it becomes a kimosh. A kimosh, according to most Mephoroshim, is some kind of thorn, is some kind of thorny plant. Some kind of thorny plant.
How can an animal become
Okay, so first of all, Reb Yaakov Emden points out, okay, you know, I mean, how does a caterpillar become a butterfly? How does a caterpillar become a cocoon and then a butterfly? I mean, you have some pretty amazing transformations that you see happen all the time.
But that's from an animal to a plant.
Okay, so I'll tell you. I mean, there is, you know, Ben Yoyovin. Okay, for 1 second, I'll tell you. Ben Yehoyada talks about the idea that maybe what it means is like eventually when the animal dies and decays, then the constituents of it that become dust eventually get you know they get put back together into a different species and such as a plant. So the Marshawn and Maral talk about it on a more